Welcome to the Bengals Wire Podcast. I'm your host, Cameron Zargar. Today, we're going to be talking about the Bengals training camp, Auden Tate's emergence, John Ross's redemption, and much more. I'm joined by Cincy Jungle's John Sheeran, who recently, John, you became the deputy editor at CJ, which is good news for CJ readers like myself. And John is a draft expert, a film guy, and he's been attending a Bengals training camp, and he's going to continue to do so. So he provided us with some video yesterday. John, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And what are your initial impressions about the Bengals, the way they look so far in training camp?
I think that, so like the overall, like, the overall thoughts, I guess, leading up to training camp with, I guess, this, what is Jeff Hobson calling this, like a revival, or is that the term that he's using for 2018 or something like that? I guess like the overall sense coming into this training camp was a lot more aggression, a lot more forward thinking, if you will, from offensive coordinator Bill Lazor and new defensive coordinator Terrell Austin and new offensive line coach Frank Pollock, a lot more just aggressive mentality, I guess. And just in a handful of training camp practices, you kind of got a sense of that. You know, there's a lot less passiveness and just overall just how the players interact with one another and just how practice has gone so far. And there's only been two contact practices, so you can't really take much away from it, but there's just a sense of, I guess, urgency. And, you know, for as much as you can tell from just practice so far, I'm not one to buy into training camp hype, and I think words are pretty meaningless at this moment. But just seeing it for myself, there is, I would say, some tangible sense of urgency that kind of validates some of the words that we've been hearing from this team in OTAs and voluntary workouts and stuff. And if that gets you optimistic, I guess, going into preseason, then the more power to you, I guess.
Well, speaking of training camp hype and meaningless words, from what I've been hearing, Auden Tate has looked like the next Randy Moss. Basically, that's what we can expect.
Basically, yeah.
Tate. Yeah. But no, I mean, good for him, first of all. Let's say that. I mean, because there was a question if he even belonged in the league. And if he did, he would be as a specialist, you know, in the red zone, for instance, right?
Right.
But he's been making catches all over the field, which raises a question for me. Is it our secondary, or, you know, just the nature of training camp, not playing in pads? Maybe he has a little extra burst, you know? Or has he worked on his game, or has he shown something that people didn't see in his college tape?
So what his college tape was that, first of all, he played in an offense without competent quarterback play, and just the Florida State's offensive line was terrible. It led to, you know, bad quarterback play in general. The offense was just really bad when Auden Tate was there, so he didn't have a lot of chances to produce. But just looking, isolating him on his tape, he was just a big body receiver who did well in contested catch situations. He did well in jump ball situations. But, you know, as a route runner, he didn't create much separation because he's just not that good of an athlete. And you can only do so much with size. If cornerbacks play with good technique and they have any sense of ball skills, you know, they can challenge you if you can't separate them within time on just any kind of route concept. So when Tate is practicing, you know, most of the catches that you see, they're in red zone drills. They're just in one-on-one situations where, you know, the play is isolated towards them. The cornerbacks don't get any safety help. All these other kind of variables that are just, you know, basically isolated to just, you know, practice mode and stuff like that. But that's really where Auden Tate would shine, because he's so much bigger than any cornerback the Bengals have on the roster. He's even bigger than any safety or linebacker that they have on the roster. And you hear all this talk about how he just snatches balls out of the air, and I went and saw him once, and it looks better in person. Like, he's literally a vacuum when the ball gets near him, and that's the definition of an insane catch radius. He's not Calvin Johnson with, you know, 4.4 speed and a 40-inch vertical. No, he's not that kind of athlete. But I think if this is in training camp and practice in general, this is where he was always going to shine, and anybody who knew him before the draft kind of predicted this. And even I said, like, he's going to make some insane plays in training camp that's going to make him a crowd favorite immediately. And that's exactly what's happened. But he still has a decent road ahead of him in order to be one of the final six or seven receivers on the roster thus far. Because training camp highlights, they can only get you so far. And what we know about Marvin Lewis and his receivers is that you have to be more than just a one-trick pony.
Yeah, but it wasn't – well, and this could have been because of scheme, but it wasn't like the Bengals receivers other than A.J. Green were getting a lot of separation in the first place. So considering what we've seen from our receivers – and, of course, we have one receiver who we know can get separation. We're going to get to him very soon. But outside of Green and John Ross how does he rank, you know, in terms of, let's say, his potential, in terms of being a regular receiver? Because you're talking about just making the roster. Mm-hmm. But let's just talk about his ceiling. Let's say, what do you envision him as being as if he continues to work on his game and make progress with that ability that he currently has? How bad is it, his inability to get separation?
I would prefer to focus on, like, the positives, but, I mean, A.J. Green threw out Brandon Marshall's name. He looks like a young Brandon Marshall, and that's pretty outlandish to say, considering Brandon Marshall, if we're gonna compare Brandon Marshall and Tate, we have to recognize that Brandon Marshall was a much better athlete and was much better. It was a much more nuanced route runner, and that's honestly where Tate is gonna have to continue to develop. He's only 21 years old, but you don't see a lot of like nuance and control at the top of any route stems, and that's a lot where his separation issues happen. You know, you can survive in the NFL with 4.6 speed, and that's what Auden Tate has on a good day. But the ability to manipulate cornerbacks and, you know, sell fakes on in-breaks or out-breaks, though, that's really crucial. So when you're talking about upside with Tate, yes, he will dominate on, like, slants and just out-body guys in the red zone and stuff like that. But A.J. Green obviously is A.J. Green. John Ross and Tyler Boyd are much more consistent route runners at this point. They're just better overall receivers. Brandon LaFell should still be given some credit for what he's done in the past 2 years. And I don't think he's dropped off that much. And then you have Josh Malone, who is obviously a much better athlete and was making strides. So in terms of potential, I wouldn't say Brandon Marshall would just be some, you know, astronomical like miracle if he ended up like that. I don't think that potential is anywhere near in the reasonable expectation of what he is. But as a solid role player contributor in this first couple of years, I think that's a reasonable expectation, and that could be rosterable. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, well, let's move on to John Ross then, who looks healthy, which is the first concern with him is his health, and also he's worked on his route running, obviously, and he's developing some chemistry with Dalton, with his better awareness of the playbook, because that was, you know, supposedly an issue with him, probably was an issue with him his first year. So, again, it's very early in training camp, but it does seem that John Ross is, you know, he's going to have the opportunity to make an impact this year. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think there was some slight concern when the first couple of days in training camp when there were reports that Boyd was taking, like, the number two reps instead of Brandon LaFell, and some people wanted that to be Ross right out of the gate, and I think it makes sense why Boyd was taking those reps and not Ross, because Boyd at least has shown something in his career. And even if Boyd does take the number two reps, there's still a sizable role for Ross to carve out for himself. Remember, Chris Henry, you know, back in his prime with the Bengals, he was the number three guy behind TJ Hushmanzada at number two, and Chad Johnson was obviously number one. The Bengals could form their own Chad, TJ, and Henry trio with Green, Boyd, and Ross. You have Boyd as kind of like the underneath possession guy, and then Ross still has plenty of opportunity to stretch the field, even coming out of the slot, and just, you know, destroy teams on vertical threats, but also have that insane quickness and separation to get open over the middle. So even if Ross doesn't start on the outside immediately, I still think that there's high efficiency potential for him, and I think it's very crucial that he gets a lot of production under his belt early to build up his confidence even more.
And sticking with the receiving core, we're going to throw Tyler Eifert in there because that is what we know him to be. That's what he's best at, is receiving. And we were basically certain that he was going to be out the first 6 weeks of the year, just, mm-hmm. you know, what, a week ago or something. And then he comes back to practice. So that was a very welcome sign. But his snaps are being limited, but not the way he's used, from what I understand, right?
Yeah. Yes, that's correct.
And how do you see him when he moves? How does he look? Is there any stiffness left from the back surgeries and the other injuries?
I mean, just from the one practice I saw, he looks like a man who passed a physical recently, and that's exactly what he did. The special thing about Eifert is how fluid he is as a route runner and just as an athlete space, because he can create separation from, you know, guys lined up against him in the slot. He's a little too fast for safeties, a little too big for linebackers, and that overall movement was definitely on display, at least in practice. He obviously wasn't doing any like inline blocking, which he would normally do in game. They're still kind of easing him back in contact and in blocking and stuff like that, but he did have some opportunities to catch balls over the middle and go up against some contested catch situations, and then came down a little hard on a couple of plays, but he got back up like nothing was wrong. So it didn't look like he was carrying or working against anything like a nagging pain or anything like that. So the movement was good. He just looked like his good self. And I think as long as the Bengals, you know, continue to just ease in this workload for him, he should be good to go.
Well, I mean, you know, all these playmakers around Andy Dalton, obviously everybody's looking for him to get back to 2015 form. And even that year, he didn't have an option like John Ross. So, and he didn't have a, you know, I mean, he had Hugh Jackson, who seemed to be able to communicate well with Dalton and motivate him. But at the same time, I mean, you look at the kind of change in culture in terms of the coaching staff this year, there seems to be even more potential, you know, just because of the way they shook it up and the kind of the attitude of the guys that they brought in. But all of that having been said, we know that Dalton needs above average protection, if not great protection, to be able to take advantage of all those playmakers. And the biggest limitation in that regard was Bodine, who's gone. And his replacement, who, yeah, we might have reached for him in the draft or whatever, but he's a starting center in the NFL, Billy Price, he has had a bit of a shaky start, right?
Shaking in for as much as he could have been doing, I guess, so far, because he had a couple bad quarterback center exchanges, snapping with Dalton under center, if you will, you know, reaching under his gluteus maximus. He rarely did that at OSU. I think he was quoted saying he did that three times, and there were three victory formations, so three QB kneels. So I'm surprised he actually didn't do any of that before training camp. It seemed like something that probably should have been worked on before he got there, because the NFL, you don't go 100% in the shotgun. But, I mean, there were just, you know, minor mishaps, and more importantly, you know, Frank Pollock being the no BS kind of guy he is, he kind of got up on him and kind of chewed him out for it. And I think the thing that they love about Price is his mental capacity and attitude towards the game, and just as a player in general. So, you know, Price is the kind of guy who's going to be hard on himself from, you know, the very beginning, and going to get those issues worked out immediately. And if they don't, then, you know, maybe Pollock has to push a little bit more. But I don't think it's going to be a lingering issue like we saw with Bodine his first couple years here. I think he's going to be okay in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, the reviews for Pollock so far by Bengals players and analysts and Bengals fans and so forth has been that he does have the right attitude. He does have the personality to push these guys. And that's something that, no offense to Paul Alexander, but he simply wasn't, he didn't have the personality for what, you know, the talent that he had to work right with. He might, who knows, he might be a better coach for the Dallas Cowboys. We don't know. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't working in Cincinnati.
And just off like that, like point, like Alexander showed he could work with, you know, talent that happened to be good. Like,
right.
He wasn't the greatest of scouting talent, but when he hit in the draft, he was good at developing that talent. But at this point, you know, the offensive line was in such a bad shape, and he was just not the guy to right the ship. And so then you bring in a guy like Pollock, who just happens to be the perfect kind of coach to, you know, develop the talent that's already here. And it's not necessarily a slight on Alexander and his total resume here. It was just what we say in Cincinnati, you know, recently, the time for a needed change. And we can refer that to another coach on the team.
Right. I mean, I think sometimes frugality dictates that you ask people to wear hats that don't really fit them. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the case with Alexander. I mean, if it was up to Mike Brown, he'd probably have him selling popcorn in the stands during the games as well, if it wasn't such an obvious kind of issue. But at any rate, we do see a change in the demeanor of Andy Dalton. Or maybe I've just haven't paid as much attention to training camp before, but he seems to be kind of looser and he seems to kind of be relaxed. And I don't know if that's because, you know, of just kind of where he is in his career, or if it's because of the people around him. But, you know, he's throwing balls at, you know, Matt Barkley's head. He's trying to tackle Carlos Dunlap. You know, his biggest asset is his ability to, his pre-snap, ability to read things pre-snap.
Right? Yeah.
And if he's given that freedom, and maybe Lazor, part of this kind of, he's been talking about giving Dalton more responsibility. And part of that is giving him more pre-snap authority. Who knows? We could see him being more comfortable and looser, and that's something we need from him.
Yeah,
Dalton,
sure.
You know, Dalton is too stiff back there. And so, in other words, the change in the coaching personnel, the change in the offensive line, we could see a Dalton who's more relaxed and therefore more composed under pressure. It's possible. I'm trying to be positive. I'm trying to find all the positive angles. It's that time of year.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that stems from the change, or the confirmation of change at offensive coordinator, because, as last year went on, there were some good performances coming out of the offense, but Bill Lazor could only do so much with the Ken Zampezi playbook already in place. But the main reports coming out of camp has been that Lazor's system is a lot more simplistic to, I guess, digest, specifically for the receivers. It's a lot of number-based calling out, and the receivers have responded well to that. And when the receivers respond well, obviously Dalton obviously likes that, because things are easier to communicate, you know, in pre-snap and changing the plays and just making calls in the huddle. And when everything is more simplistic like that, then the tempo can rise. And we've seen how Dalton operates in the no huddle and how more efficient he is. And when in 2015, when you saw him, you know, interact, you know, with Hugh Jackson on the sideline, and how, you know, he was all buddy buddy with him, you know, he just looked like he was having fun. When Dalton has fun,
that's
typically
true.
he's obviously more relaxed and just plays more aloof and just plays better, because there's not as much pressure on him to, you know, do the things that, you know, necessarily elite quarterbacks can do. He has all this help now, or, you know, at least right now, to kind of carry him on, and he can at least do that from what we've seen.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's true. I mean, it's just kind of the nature. I mean, people's natures are different, and Dalton is kind of the guy who would have the tendency to overthink things if
exactly.
He doesn't feel completely, you know, and so that's a big asset for us to have him, you know, buy into the system and whatnot. Another guy who distractions could be a potential issue for, potential, is Carlos Dunlap, who's very much looking to get a new deal. I mean, he had his agent on the field bargaining with Mike Brown. Good luck there. But I mean, he does look good. He's looked good so far. You know, he wouldn't let Dalton go. He, you know, is trying to establish that, you know, he's his worth there, I guess. It seems like a deal is inevitable, and it should be. I mean, he is underpaid considering what he brings to the table. Mm-hmm. How do you see that playing out?
Yeah, so the typical timeline for extensions before the season is really in that period between the final preseason game and the season opener. So it's about a two week and a half window. And that's typically where these extensions have come from. It's really impressive to see Drew Rosenhaus actually go to Cincinnati, because I'm pretty sure he represents like half the league. So to section out time of his day to see Dunlap obviously means that things are progressing in the right direction. And I think that because of how underpaid Dunlap is, the raise that he will end up getting is not going to put him with, you know, like the top five, like defensive ends paid around the league. So it'll be a deal that Brown and the front office will eventually come to terms with, specifically when you're talking about structuring the guaranteed money in the front of the contract and how it won't be as high as, you know, other deals that can be compared it to. So Dunlap will get a deal done. Definitely one of Geno Atkins or Carlos Dunlap will have an extension before week one. Maybe both will, because we've seen that before in 2013.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some cap experts on Twitter demonstrating that's very doable. And I'm sure Mike Brown, you know, hates the internet, because we can all see that, you know, how easy it is for these, you know, extensions to happen, and people, you know, he can actually extend and pay all of his good players and he's not going to go over the cap. But yeah, I mean, it's possible for them to extend Dunlap and Atkins and Denard.
I mean, we've seen Minnesota do that exact thing. Like, this off, like, they just extended Stephon Diggs today. Like, people thought that once they signed Kirk Cousins to that fully guaranteed contract, that most of their core would walk away in a few years, but they're doing exactly the opposite of that.
So that's what I was going to say. And they're paying their quarterback about two or three times what we're paying ours.
Exactly. So.
And that's going to be a problem. If Dalton has a good year, that's going to be an issue for the Bengals. I don't know. They'll figure something out. But first things first, let's have him, you know, let's see him have that great year.
Yeah.
John, it was great having you on, and I hope you can come back a little later in training camp and give us some more updates. You can follow John on Twitter, @John_Sheeran. Definitely check out his articles on Cincy Jungle there, and I'm saying this objectively, they are the best analysis you'll see about the Bengals on the internet. And John also is on the YouTube channel DNH Sports, and he does a lot of short videos there. You can check out some of his content there as well. That's all we have for the Bengals Wire podcast this time. Make sure to check out bengalswire.usatoday.com and tune in again. Thank you.